In the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale platform where each piece is carefully inspected by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. Use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Louis Vuitton, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com to get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAG10 for 10% off your first purchase.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
In by Kulusevski.
Welcome, listeners, to The Extra Inch. My name's Windy, and I'm joined by our tactics guy and a man who's once again got his spreadsheet out. It's Nathan Lee Clark. Hello, Nathan.
Can barely put it away these days.
No, I know. So many changes, so many things to keep on top of. We're going to talk lots about the transfer window and the shape of the squad going into the last half of the season. But first, a few little bits of admin. Firstly, thank you very much to Thomas George for the fantastic email. Thomas, I almost feel guilty that we're not going to read your email out, but there's so much to talk about, but it was really appreciated. Secondly, David Alfie Ward is, who you might know from The Fighting Cock, is doing a thing called Under the Lights Comedy Club with another comedian called Tom Glover. It's a show, a daytime comedy show, for people who are going to be in Milan for the Champions League match, particularly good for solo fans who are looking to meet other people for a pre-match show and get together. It's £12 at 12:30 at Salone 4 in Milan.
Salone, if you just look, I reckon.
Salone. Yeah, I did wonder if it's Salone. But look up Under the Lights Comedy Club and you'll find all the details you need with that. And finally, our friend Sarah is running the food bank collection once again before the Man City game. So between 1:30 and 3:30, they will be parked up next to the burger stall opposite the Corner Pin, which is the Beavertown pub, the pub that Beavertown took over outside the stadium. They particularly need tinned fruit, tinned custard and tinned meat. So if you're going to be going to the game and you fancy helping out the Tottenham food bank, that would be very much appreciated. We should say get well soon to Antonio Conte, who has had some surgery to have his gallbladder removed. Nathan, this has not been a good time for Antonio Conte.
No, it's something that we haven't done a great job of touching on in all of our criticism of Antonio Conte, which I think it is fair to us to have made still. There's definitely a very relevant human element. And if several of my friends have passed away, and I was going to say if I had excruciating stomach pain, but I don't have to actually imagine that, I would certainly want to go home too, you know? Kind of understandable on a human level for any other thoughts we might have on how this time with him at Spurs has gone. And to be fair, it's worth acknowledging that an unsigned contract does leave the club in a difficult position. He himself is also definitely in a difficult position, which I think is worth sympathising with to an extent, definitely.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, he's not an old man, Antonio Conte. He's middle-aged, but it must be really hard when your peers are dying around you and would make you question your own mortality and the time you've got left and how you might want to spend that time. So I do think it's like completely reasonable for him to be thinking about, spending time with his family, being at home in Italy more. I do absolutely see that from his perspective and why he might want some wriggle room in terms of why he hasn't signed a new contract, etc. And it does feel like the reporting is hinting more and more towards him going back to Italy in the summer, it feels to me.
Yeah, to go home, right?
Mm-hmm. And I get that. And I do, I really, you know, sincerely, like, I hope he gets well soon. It sounds like a really horrible thing to have gone through. And obviously, it's surgery, which can be done fairly quickly. So Mushtaka, who is a listener, has a friend who's a surgeon and said that this is a one night stay in hospital and then 10 days recovery. So hopefully he won't be missing for too long, but still not a nice thing for him to have to go through on top of everything else he's been dealing with. Let's talk about the closing of the transfer window. So we are late this week. We normally record on a Monday, unless Spurs are playing on a Monday.
Let's be honest. Let's be honest. We were due. We were set. Mm. We were penciled in. This is why Barney isn't here. Sorry, guys, about that. We were penciled in to record Monday, late afternoon, early evening. And then the news that the Porro deal might fall through came out. And I was like, let's... you guys free on Wednesday? Let's not do this right now. And I'm very glad. I'm missing Bardi, obviously, but I'm very glad that we waited, because we would be sat here going, well, if we sign him, then this, and if we don't sign him, then that. And at least we knew, and yeah, we know for the better. I believe.
Just in fairness, Bardi was meant to be here tonight. Yeah. Like we didn't say it's Monday with Bardi or Wednesday without Bardi. Let's do Wednesday. He had said he could make it, and he forgot he had other plans.
Yeah.
So we wish he was here. In fact, what we'll do is we'll slot in a voice note right now from Bardi with his takes on the transfer window.
So Windy has made me paranoid. Last time I wasn't there on a podcast, or make a voice note, made a voice note, and then he just decided to take me apart and I had no way to respond. So I could go like Eminem in 8 Mile and just diss everybody, then he can't come back at me, but that's not my style. I think the window's been pretty decent. I'm pretty happy with it. We've moved out a player, which Conte doesn't fancy, two players that Conte doesn't fancy, and we got in two players who he'll use and who offer us something different. It's very sad about Brian Hill. It would have been great if it worked, but if Conte doesn't see a role for him or he's unwilling to fight for that position, then he's useless being in the squad. So move him out, that's fine. Jed Spence, it's a bit sad, but he wasn't getting minutes either, so he's pointless. And at least he removes the question mark. Jed Spence is gone. He can no longer be something that Conte is questioned about. And it removes a bit of ambiguity around the squad. We've now got two right wing backs. Emerson, a slightly more defensive one, and Porro, who looks great going forward. I think the two of them can work in tandem, and then we can use them according to who we're up against. I'm happy with that. I think the Porro deal probably took longer than it should have. We could have got it done faster, but it's a great signing. Danjuma looks pretty decent, and if he can offer something else and be a willing part of the squad, then it's just a good thing. I'm pretty happy with the transfer window. We didn't get the centre-back or the creative influence in midfield, but it's all right. I'm feeling pretty confident. I think a nice run of results, something good in the FA Cup, get something against Man City. Then we've got the Champions League. Milan are in a bit of a mess. I think it's all right. I don't think there's any kind of narrative that can be drawn to it. I don't think you can take any kind of look at it and go, oh, no, there's a conspiracy or we're setting the team up for the next manager. I think we've given Conte now a right wing back that's highly functional. And then across the other side in Perisic, we have a left wing back who's pretty functional. I think we have what we need now to push on and get in that top four. I hate rating window, so I'm not going to rate it, but I'm pretty happy. Now, go after my manager, Windy. What you got?
So if we think about the players we've signed and players we've sold, loaned, released, the players we've got in, Pedro Porro, very exciting right wing back. I think we can all agree that's an outstanding improvement in our squad. Danjuma, who we spoke about last week, and Jude Soon-Suk Bell, who is very much a development squad signing player from Chelsea. Players who have gone out, Brian Hill has gone back to Sevilla on loan. Jed Spence has gone to Rennes on loan. Matt Doherty was released and has signed for Atletico Madrid. Harvey White has gone on loan to Derby County. And a young goalkeeper, Hayton, has gone to Barnsley. He was released and has gone to Barnsley. And there were a couple of other things in the offing. So Malachi Fagan-Walcott was due to move to Swindon, but that fell through at the last minute due to paperwork issues. And there was some talk around Alfie Devine going out on loan, which we'll come on to a bit later. But that's the shape of the transfer window for Spurs. I'm interested, Nathan, to get your sort of initial thoughts. I guess the thing to think about is, are we stronger now than we were at the start of the window, and use that as a starting point?
Yes. Yeah, so I do my spreadsheet. thing, and I did one at the beginning of the window, and I've done one now at the end of the window, and it definitely looks prettier. Some of the steps along the way are dubious, but on the whole, we're stronger. So I was looking at the spreadsheet last night, and I was thinking, okay, we are lacking depth at central and right centre back. We are lacking a profile close enough to Kulusevski. But this is getting close to a fairly well balanced squad now.
Mm-hmm.
But then I have this other concern that we need to be playing a three-man midfield, and we have not built for a three-man midfield at all, and that we have the exact same profile pretty much five times in midfield, and we can't play them as a three, and we would lose all our creativity if we were to remove Kulusevski from the team. So in order to try to grade this window overall, it's quite a challenge, because I think there's two very different ways of looking at it.
Yeah, absolutely. And then also you factor in the fact that Antonio Conte might not be here come the summer. And so we're sort of building the squad for now, but also for the future. And that makes it more complicated.
Well, we've brought in two players. Obviously, one is potentially only temporary, of a good age profile. Definitely. But also, Pedro Porro is almost too offensively focused to be a wing back, let alone a full back, right? So definitely the squad is built to be playing with a back three. I know Harry Brooks disagreed on Twitter. He said, look, if you've got a wing back, he can...
I disagree too.
Okay.
I disagree
okay.
too.
You think wing back to full back transition is not such a challenge?
I think wing back to full back transition is not a challenge at all in the right team structure.
Okay.
I mean, so if I think about how Pedro Porro plays for Sporting, they play a possession-based style. They dominate the ball in the majority of matches against some quite poor teams. And Pedro Porro essentially waits on the shoulder of the defence for a diagonal to come his way and then latches onto it. So to be honest, I think the difference between that and the way he'll be asked to play under Antonio Conte is far more different than the difference between what he ends up doing under Antonio Conte and then what he ends up doing under our next manager. So not that that makes it any better necessarily, but I think like I'm not worried about the conversion from wing back to full back. I'm a bit more worried about the conversion from possession based team to counter attacking team. That said, his skill set is, I think, outstanding. Both in terms of creative passing, and that involves his right-footed passing up the line, but also being able to come inside and pass with his left foot, really nice passing range with his left foot, and a variety of crosses, which I think we have possibly never seen at Spurs from a wing-back. Kyle Walker was amazing at cutbacks. Kieran Trippier was amazing at crosses from deep. I think Pedro Porro can do both. I think Pedro Porro can produce outstanding cutbacks and also crosses on the run from deep.
Yeah, his hard hit, his borderline laces crosses are not something we've really seen at Spurs. Trying to think. No, Reguilon's technique isn't a million miles away from that. Sessegnon and Rose never hit them like that. Perisic doesn't. He gets in close to the box and almost chips them. So yeah, he's unique in that sense.
The last fullback I can think of us having that crossed the ball as well as Pedro Porro can cross the ball is Christian Ziger, and that's going back to the early noughties.
Well, I think people think of Kieran Trippier not unreasonably as being an outstanding crosser of the ball.
Yeah.
Porro is on a similar level of in his crossing, whilst also being able to take on his man. Trippier never could. Like, not even just take on his man, but also, carry the ball, hold on to the ball, those kinds of things, where Trippier was like a turn-based football player, what I mean?
Yeah.
It's very static. Okay, so I've done a video on Pedro Porro. I'm intending to do another one, a sort of a fun bonus celebratory one. You don't seem especially concerned about the concerns I laid out in my video.
There are lots of concerns about his defending.
Sure.
From people, and I think it's reasonable to be concerned about his defending. He is not great. He's not a great one-on-one defender.
No.
And I think that is partly exaggerated due to the way that Sporting play, but also he is simply not a great one-on-one defender, in the same way that Ivan Perisic is not a good one-on-one defender. I think that could get exposed, sure. I think it'll get exposed less in a wing-back system, more in a flat-back four. But I also think, if you think back to the last time we played a back four and played it well under Pochettino, the team structure meant that Kyle Walker and then Shaqiri and Trippier were playing essentially as wing-backs because we had a defensive midfielder dropping in between the centre-backs to split them in possession, and then a double pivot to protect our defence, meaning that our wing-backs could stay higher. And I think if we work towards that system, that sort of system again, it gives enough protection that we don't need to worry about the fact that Pedro Porro has some weaknesses in his defensive game. I think in terms of positioning, you know, in an Antonio Conte back five compared to a typical back four in the defensive phase, how do I phrase this? Vertically, I don't think there is any difference. Horizontally, there is a difference. So he'll naturally be wider than he would if he were playing a back four where he would have to tuck in more. I think it's fair to say that his concentration is a slight weakness. Like his defensive positioning is a slight weakness. He doesn't always know when to tuck back in.
He wants to be an aggressive defender. He's a good presser. He wants to go and compete and win for the ball. He's not too worried about what happens behind him while he does that. And that is to his defensive detriment. I don't think he's a great defender. I also don't care that much about wing-backs defending, you know. We had a couple of games recently where we saw Sessegnon and then Perisic play a role back-to-back and we saw the difference there. But I do think that if you're in a position where your wing-back can defensively cost you the game, you've made other mistakes earlier along the line. If you look at that City game, okay, yes, Perisic got absolutely cooked alive by Mahrez on three occasions, right? But before that situation has arrived, we've allowed City to dominate the game. And I appreciate City dominate the game very often, but it wasn't our game plan to allow that to happen, because we didn't allow it to happen in the first half, and then City up their intensity, right? So just not too worried about Porro defensively, just because I don't think wingbacks need to be that good at defending. As long as they're trying, they're generally doing all right. Where I'm more concerned is his behaviour in possession and in build-up. Are you not concerned about that at all?
Just the fact that he's so relentless in his desire to make something happen every time he has the ball.
Absolutely.
Cross, 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 force it, force it, force it. One could guess that Antonio Conte might want to coach that out of him. He's a very pragmatic manager. He wants players to wait for the exact right situation before they try and force something. Whether he can do that, who knows? Whether he finds it frustrating, who knows? But given how little we create currently, I'm not worried about it.
Okay. I have those concerns. I put them out there. But I'm definitely still excited about Porro. He was a player that I have had on my right wing back list for a while. Been really keen on his attacking output because he's outstanding. One thing I haven't talked about much that is in line with his decision making is that he takes a horrendous number of shots from like deep crossing positions, and so that's going to be fun to touch on in a couple of weeks' time when that comes up. The sort of the Kyle Norton special,
the back post special, yeah.
So, but he's really exciting. He's so technically strong. He's fun. I've no doubt that we'll have fun with him. And in terms of like, building I feel he is somewhat of a specialist to our current situation, and you feel pretty confident, and most of us feel fairly confident that our current manager will be gone in the summer. So do you have any concerns about long-term planning with Porro? You think because of his age, because of the versatility of a modern fullback and wingback, that he's just good and good is good?
Yeah, honestly, and people have said, you know, it's one thing having Pedro Porro in a back four system, but it's another thing having Pedro Porro and Destiny Udogie in a back four system. And I do understand that, because normally when you've got one really attacking fullback, you would have another one that's a little more defensive and would tuck in alongside the centre backs. But that wasn't the case with Walker and Rose, was it? We had two very, very attacking fullbacks at the same time, and we managed it because we had Wanyama, we had Dembele, we had players who dropped in and provided cover and covered space. And I think we can have that again. We've got a really good set of defensive midfielders in our squad, so I'm not overly concerned, basically. I think you have to... We've been so used to watching our team defend first and foremost over the last 3 or 4 years, and it's, you sort of forget that we should be thinking of these players as swords and not shields. You know, these are really exciting players who can do a lot of damage to the opposition. Let's not focus on the defensive flaws. Let's think about how we maximise the upside and protect ourselves in other ways.
So yeah, the final upside to touch on is that, like, having a threat on the right wing opens up more space elsewhere in the pitch, right? Creates more room inside for Kulusevski, and potentially, you know, quite a bit we've seen opposition sides just leave their wide left flank open for Emerson Royale because he doesn't offer anything there. And as a result, that they can cram the middle more, they can put more focus and attention towards tracking Sun's runs, they can worry more about Perisic and stuff. So this gives us, if you think about our front line of five, our first choice front line of five being Perisic, Sun, Kulusevski and Porro, that's threat across all five divisions of the space there, right? So that's definitely really promising in what that offers. Emerson Royale does remain our now only other option at right back.
Yeah, so before we come on to that, do you have any views about the way in which we went about the signing of Pedro Porro, the chase across the window?
So apparently, and this is a collection of loose reports here and there, right, and the how sounds these reports are, especially in combination, you can't be certain of. The idea is that he had this clause, 45 million euro release clause. First of all, a release clause is a lump sum that has to be paid up front, and that's never going to appeal to Tottenham. Mm-hmm. And secondly, apparently, the clause was only valid for the first half of the month of January, and not the second half. And we didn't know that. And in the first half of the month of January, we were bidding under the release clause, and Sporting were saying, "No, you're going to have to play the release clause." And then in the second half, when we met the release clause, they were like, "Oh no, that's not valid anymore. That's only valid in the first half of the month," because they genuinely didn't want to sell him. They didn't. Mm-hmm. They didn't want to lose him. And fair play to them. They've got Hector Bellerin in, which I think it's a pretty good replacement as they go.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's odd. So we also apparently made considerable use of intermediaries. We didn't have Paratici and Levy in Portugal. We sent an agency on our behalf. And that's kind of something that we've been calling for, right? We've been saying Levy needs to step back from football operations, and that's what this is. And we've also said, hey, our footballing operation, we're glad that we have a director of football, but it shouldn't just be one guy on his earphones that come with the phone 24 hours a day, flying absurd air miles, you know, going back and forth and back and forth and back and forth. We should have a fluid operation where tasks are, what's the word I'm looking for?
Devolved?
Sure, go with that. Tasks are handed out to various people, various aspects on the go, so that we're working on multiple things at the same time, right? So
delegated
is the word. Delegated, right? Delegated to intermediaries. And we did that, and apparently they cogged it up. So
well, so this, I think this is from the Athletic report. It says, when the representatives from CAA base who worked on the deal tried to get a position in writing from Sporting to take to Tottenham, they were left frustrated. There were moments when it felt as if negotiations were heading in the right direction and a verbal agreement was close, but these proved to be false dawns more than once. The goalposts kept moving. It does sound like Sporting have been very, very challenging to deal with.
And I don't blame them, because again, this is a player that they didn't want to lose, and it's on us to make it a situation where they would want to, they would accept the terms. So, you know, apparently there was an admin fee, a last minute admin fee. And I don't know if you've ever experienced buying a fucking ticket at the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium before, but they also lump in a last minute admin fee. So I don't feel too sympathetic on that. And then we paid the admin fee by losing some of our sell on from Edwards, which was an idea we proposed in an earlier trade.
Mm-hmm. Lost 15% on that.
Yeah, which seems like that would, again, like eventually be more, likely be eventually more than the fees.
Mm-hmm.
And also, we changed it to a loan with an obligation, potentially, I suspect, to skirt around Sporting having to pay City as much of their cuts of Porro's clause. Which goes to, like, there's so many uses of clauses and there's so much skirting around the clauses. It really is a sort of a very silly lawyer's game. trading, right?
Yeah. Yeah, there. I've seen fans say, you know, what we should have done is just pay the 45 million euro release clause up front, and rather than paying it all in one go, we could have essentially taken out a loan and paid the interest on that loan, which would have been 6 or 7%, I'd imagine.
Yeah.
But 6 or 7% on 45 million euros is a significant amount of money.
It's almost a Matt Doherty.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And I can't imagine that would have been too attractive to Daniel Levy. But you're right, I think it's really difficult to speak about the Pedro Porro deal without also talking about what happened with Matt Doherty on deadline day, because we've ended up taking a really, really significant financial hit here, I believe, which kind of makes you think, why were we so precious about the Pedro Porro negotiation? Because when it came to it, we've just lost a ton of money.
Okay, I have two new obsessions that I need to share with you. Impress No Glue Press-On Manis and Impress Press-On Falsies Lashes. Trust me, these are getting ready game changers. Both require no glue, so there is no damage to your natural nails and lashes, no mess, and no annoying dry times. Just one step and you're done. Boom. Instant glam. Visit impressbeauty.com/presson and use code PRESSON25 at checkout for 25% off Impress manicure and Press-On falsies.
So let me read you, to sort of sum this up, let me read you a part of Alistair Gold's really good post-transfer deadline day reporting. He says, of Atletico Madrid, now they turned their attention to Doherty. That's when it all got a bit messy. On Tuesday morning, Doherty was all set to leave on a loan deal without an option or obligation to buy, and he was in Madrid to complete the final details of the move. However, at some point during the process, somebody within Spurs must have realised that with Spence heading out on loan, the club had now reached the limits imposed in recently changed FIFA rules that dictate you must only have 8 players out on international loans at any one time. Spurs already had Tongi and Ndombele, Giovanni Lo Celso, Reguilon, Brian Hill, Harry Winks, Rodon, Spence and Destiny Udogie out on loan. From that alone, it's worth noting that the club's transfer policies have been so poor and their ability to sell players so bad that they have 7 signings that cost them around 250 million sitting out on loan at other clubs. What it also meant was that Doherty could not, by FIFA rules, go out on loan, and a compromise had to be found, one that nobody was expecting. The decision was taken to mutually terminate the Republic of Ireland international's contract, and he joined Atletico on a short 6-month deal. Spurs had mutually terminated Serge Aurier's contract in 2021, but the Ivorian's deal only had a year remaining, while Doherty had a full 18 months to go. So, we had an inkling about this because Joel Wertheimer, I never know how to pronounce Joel's name, who is Wertwile on Twitter, really good Twitter follow. Do follow Joel. Joel is an ex-sub, and we chatted in the Discord, and he was saying, can anyone find a reason why we would be allowed more than 8 players out on international loan? Because otherwise I think Spurs are about to break a regulation. And absolutely, people were trawling the FIFA laws to find a loophole. Maybe there's a loophole around Destiny Udogie or something, but no, we couldn't find anything. So Spurs were about to breach a regulation, so we thought. I asked a guy at the club and said, you know, what's going on here? And the club were like, no, everything's fine. And at that point, I kind of thought, oh shit, is Doherty going permanently? He was going permanently, but not in the way that one might have thought. He was released. And people are sort of saying, you know, this is a saving. We're saving Matt Doherty's wages. Let me tell you, that is not how a mutual termination works in football. Why would Matt Doherty agree to go for nothing with no payment when he has an 18-month contract on $66,000 a week? He would not do that. He simply would not do that for a 6-month contract at Atletico Madrid. So Spurs have paid him off. Judging from my experience in the workplace, they've probably paid him off a significant amount. I imagine they've probably paid either the rest of his contract or not far off it. So we're talking 5 million quid. And maybe they've paid him off 6 months. Maybe they paid him off a year, but they paid him off something to get rid of him. That's what mutual agreement means.
Or
there's some crazy shit going down which involves him coming back to us in 6 months' time.
Yeah, or he has a 12-month contract on the table for him. A gentleman's agreement in the summer.
That would be wild, wouldn't it? That would be like, what was he called? Who's the guy? Well, I can't remember his name. The guy we signed essentially from Man U who went to another club in between.
Oh.
The left back.
He went to a Portuguese club.
Or Belgian, I seem to recall.
He had a fun name.
Oh my God, what's his name?
Oh, he was Belgium, you're right. Zeki Fryers.
Zeki Fryers. Well done. Yeah. Zeki Fryers. Do you remember that workaround that we came up with? Do you think genuinely that's an option?
I
think that
might be what's happening. I would not be shocked to discover that we've done a pseudo loan.
So what do you make of this, Nathan?
Well, I was going to make the point that is it Ali Gold, he made in the article himself, is that the reason we have already got 8 players out on international loans is because of 8. Okay, maybe 6. Maybe only 6 failures in our in our process along the way, right?
Yeah.
Ndombele and Lo Celso, I think that we failed them as much as they failed us. Harry Winks, okay, we couldn't get a sale for him, so we did a sort of a get him on the market loan type thing. Jed Spence had options from English clubs as well as several options abroad, and smartly went to the club who were going to actually play him, but that meant that it was an international one.
Mm-hmm.
Udoji is a buy before your loan deal thing. Fair enough. Reguilon, I'm sympathetic to because I thought Reguilon was a magnificent signing, and he just hasn't worked out. So give him a buy on that one. Joe Roden, I think the club have made a mistake along the way in purchasing a young player for managers who don't play young players.
Yeah.
I think that he was quite a hot prospect when we signed him, and now he's not.
Yeah. And the same could be said of Brian Hill.
Yeah, well, that's kind of its own point. Do we want to move on to Hill right now? And then
let's briefly finish Doherty, okay. And then we'll move on to Brian Hill. So the final thing I would say on the Matt Doherty situation is a lot of people are saying, you know,
he's better than Emerson Royale.
No, not even that. People are saying he's rubbish.
Okay.
You know, it's good that we've got rid of Matt Doherty. He's rubbish and we've signed an upgrade. Ruthless. And why do you care? Why do you care that we've released him? It doesn't matter. And I'll say there's a couple of reasons to care. One of them is a little bit tenuous, but it's that Matt Doherty is Harry Kane's best friend at Spurs. That's just the reality. And we want to keep Harry Kane happy. And if we have, at the last minute, released Matt Doherty, and the players, according to Alistair Gold's reporting, were surprised about it, I don't know. It feels a little bit risky. The other point is, it's not even the money about, you know, the hit we've taken in releasing a player who we could have got a few million for. It's not even that bothers me. It's the lack of organisation behind the scenes, the lack of planning, the lack of understanding how many players we've got out on loan that concerns me greatly. You know, this is a multi-million pound business, and there are decisions being taken at the last minute on transfer deadline day that make us look completely incompetent and undermine a lot of the otherwise good work that I think we have done over the past couple of years in the transfer window. And the fact that this is the second time in a row it's happened after Serge Aurier goes to show to me that there's something going wrong. Like, I've got no issue with us releasing players if they hold no value and we just need to get shot at them. But we didn't need to get rid of Matt Doherty. We could have just kept him around and not added him to the Champions League squad list, and that would have been just fine.
Just as you're typing that, I've added loan army sell to my spreadsheet, so I am now keeping track of our international loans limit better than Spurs are doing.
Nice. So Brian Hill, how are we feeling about Brian Hill joining Sevilla?
I'm happy for him, because he was frustrated because Conte came in and said, oh, this little boy is not physical enough to play football for me, right? And then he worked and he worked. We saw that he was the hardest worker in pre-season. We saw beyond just hard work that he was also good when he played in like the friendlies. And did he play like an early cup game or anything like that? Or am I imagining that? Maybe he came off the bench.
He had a game in the Champions League, didn't he?
And then continued to work hard and then wasn't used with Kulusevski out injured for weeks and weeks. Finally, the second half of the season comes by and he's thrown in. Struggles against Villa, but Conte says he played well and I'm impressed and he's working really hard. Plays the next game. Was it Palace? Crucial in two goals. Really good. Finally, we have a backup to Kulusevski. Oh, it was that guy we had all along. Conte says Hill's no longer going to go out on loan. Okay, brilliant. I'm happy. He's happy. He's earned it. He's proved against the odds. And Kane came out and said, look, I said to these players, you just got to take your chance when it comes. And he took his chance when it came. And then we signed Dan Juma and he can go on loan now.
And the thing is, and I think we probably spoke of it last week, they're such different players.
Yes.
They're both attacking midfielders and that's where the comparison ends.
Yeah, so I spoke about this on the last episode, and I also put out a free video that went out on Reddit because they're not very good at taking down match footage on Reddit. So go and check that out if you haven't. Where I touched on Dan Juma as a player a bit. I compared him to Son, again stuff we did on the previous episode, and then I expressed my concerns about the squad building in bringing in a player like that. So Dan Juma predominantly plays for Villarreal. He played this sort of half position where he's half a left winger and he's half a centre forward, which is not dissimilar to a role that we've seen Son play a few times for Spurs, right? Especially under Mourinho. And so in that, he compares directly to Son pretty well. Now, he does have more to his game in his build-up play, in his dribbling, in his crossing, in his tight space control, and his bringing others into play. So he has played on the right before. He played on the right for Bournemouth a bit, about 250 minutes. I think that you can answer this for yourselves, right? How good a backup to Kulusevski is Son? How good a backup to Kulusevski has Richarlison been? Dan Juma's a little better than that, I think. So Dan Juma's a better player. He's a readier player. He's a more physical player. So in terms of overall quality, he's an upgrade. But in terms of the profile, the role, footedness, suitability, we have weakened our depth to a player who spent a lot of the season now injured, and it's absolutely crucial to our chance creation. So I'm a little worried about that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm worried, and I think it's fucking stupid the way we've gone about it.
Yeah. I completely agree. And, you know, lots of people have posted this thing online about how we've paid Sevilla like 20 or plus million for Brian Hill and given them Eric Lamella.
And Brian Hill as well.
Yeah, exactly. And they've ended up with Brian Hill as well. And like, obviously that's stupid because they haven't got Brian Hill permanently. They've got him for the rest of the season. And presumably they've paid a loan fee also. Like, we'd have got some money for Hill. But it does make us look a little stupid again with our transfer policy. So that's Hill. Jed Spencer's gone to Rennes. So when this was first reported, it became clear that Jed Spencer turned down Atletico Madrid because he thought he was going to get more game time at Rennes, which I think sounds
sound, right?
Like a really sensible decision. And then at the time, people were like, actually, their captain is their right wing back, and he's in really good form. It's Traore is in really good form, and no one knew about an injury to him. Turns out he's got injured, and he's going to be out for 6 weeks. So Jed Spence is going to play, and I think that's a really good sign. But maybe in 6 weeks, their captain and in form right wing back comes back and displaces Jed Spence. So maybe he'll get 6 weeks of game time, and then who knows what? So it could be a slightly disappointing end to the season for Spence, but hopefully over the next 6 months, we'll be seeing Jed Spence comps all over our Twitter feeds. Him just like having a lot of fun with French fullbacks, having them on strings, because that would make me extremely happy. Like, and Harvey White is the other player that's gone out on loan. He's gone to Derby County in League One.
Good loan.
I've got no problem with that. He'll play regularly, and that's what he needs at this stage.
Nice.
My issue with Brian Hill, with Jed Spence and Harvey White is we've essentially learnt nothing in the last 6 months, and their development has stalled. Other than training with the first team, I mean, you can argue whether you think that's more beneficial or less beneficial than, you know, actually playing football matches. Personally, I think all of them would have benefited more from playing regular games over the first 6 months of the season, and I think we should have loaned them out at the start of the season. And there's something skew-iff about how we are assessing our squad and deciding who to loan and to where. And this happened in January is better than it not happening at all. But I just think that the overall strategy needs serious... someone needs to take charge of a situation. And someone needs to say, hey, look, we've got all these players. Are you going to play them, Antonio? No? Okay, cool. We'll loan them then. You know, this has not been good for White and Spence and Brian Hill. Brian Hill in particular, because, you know, he's visibly frustrated. He's... the way he speaks about having joined Sevilla, he's obviously had a difficult time.
What if we hired a guy and his whole job was whatever it was to see academy route into first team or something?
I know, right?
And then he leaves after less than a year to join Arsenal because he's frustrated with constant changes within the work at the club. Yeah.
Yeah, indeed. We should mention Jude Soon-Suk-Bell, who was an absolutely prolific under 18 at Chelsea. Prolific, like ridiculous scoring record. And then I think it's fair to say has not developed as they would have hoped.
Okay.
There's some speculation as to the reasons behind that. I don't really want to engage with all of that speculation, to be honest, because I'd rather give the player a chance to prove himself. But there was definitely some talent there. I think it's fair to say that, like, as we've seen at Spurs in the past, not all players are the same player at 21 they were at 18. Like, it, player development is not linear. It's not a straight line, and it's really difficult to work out what happened at what point to stop it, you know, to stop him becoming a superstar. But you never know. A fresh start might be just what he needs. Worst case scenario, we've got him on a free. We can probably get him out on loan and flip him for a fee at some point. Best case scenario is he rediscovers his previous form at Chelsea and we've got a real talent on our hands. To be honest, we've got extremely good young forwards at our club now. And, you know, I'm not even thinking of Parrott and Scarlett. I'm thinking of Donnelly and Lancashire, who are really, really exciting young talents. Add Soon-Suk-Bell to that, and that's a pretty good array of attacking talent that we should be pretty excited about, I think.
Lancashire, who was brought in by the aforementioned... progression guy, guy who's now left to go to Arsenal.
Yeah.
Chris something, I think.
I forget his name. So when we started talking about Doherty, you mentioned Emerson Royale. How do you feel that he's the one that survived of the two of them? Of the three of them, I suppose.
Well, we've seen this season a very strange back and forth where at the start of the season, Emerson Royale is playing almost all of the minutes and Doherty finally sort of finds his way in, and you're thinking, oh, okay, this is a fitness thing. He still wasn't recovered from his injury. He took his time to build his fitness. So Doherty gets a run as the first choice right wing back, and it's better. It's not great, but it's better. And then sort of more recently, Emerson Royale has taken the place back from him for some reason. So that's obviously a factor. Conte does seem to like Emerson Royale.
Well, you had ITK that it was more than that, that he loved him. He absolutely loves him.
He really likes him, yeah. Yeah, I have heard that from a very reliable source as well. But maybe also we think that we can get a fee for Emerson Royale, just not in the January window, whereas there isn't a fee for a 31-year-old. So we're going to hold on to Royale to extract more value out of him and then work something else out for a backup next season, like signing Matt Doherty on a free.
Jesus.
Or I suppose if you're assuming Conte goes, then Jed Spence can come back to the club.
Yeah, I mean, you have to say that if Conte goes, then we look in really good shape next year with some of the young players returning to the club after loan. Hopefully better for that additional development and additional game time. I did want to talk briefly about Alfie Devine, but before we do that, I will hand over to Bardi to talk about our partnership with Athletic Greens.
I started my AG1 journey because I like clarity in what I'm doing. With AG1, there's one drink and one drop of vitamin D. No last minute spanners, no hidden extra costs, no confusion over who's doing what and who's paying whom. There's no need to fly out to Lisbon or the local health shop to get what you need. AG1 helps your metabolism, energy, and ability to adapt to stress, which are all very useful in a tight deadline window. Stick to your automations. One scoop of AG1, one drop of vitamin D, shake and poro away into your body.
So Athletic Greens was created when the founder experienced a ton of gut health issues and ended up on a complicated supplement routine to recover, which cost him $100 a day. And AG1 supports better sleep quality and recovery. To make it easy, Athletic Greens is going to give you a free 1-year supply of immune-supporting vitamin D and 5 free travel packs with your first purchase. All you have to do is visit athleticgreens.com/extrainch. That is athleticgreens.com/extrainch to take ownership over your health and pick up the ultimate daily nutritional insurance. So, Alfie Devine, there was some speculation at the start of the season, before the window closed, that he would get a season-long loan. He didn't, and the suggestions were that one of the reasons we might not have loaned him was because we were hanging on to him so that he becomes club-trained for the UEFA regulations. That is, that he's been at the club for a sufficient amount of time that he qualifies as being club trained and is essentially an extra player we can have in our squad. You can have 4 association trained players, 2 of which can be club trained, and it means it opens the squad up and makes it much more straightforward in terms of the number of players you can name. So we have other opportunities to keep him around and make him club trained. It doesn't have to be now. He can go on loan and come back and stay at the club for 6 months and still be club trained. So I'm not sure that this is a reasonable take. I personally think that Alfie Devine at this stage in his career is more than ready for a men's loan. He needs to go and play men's football. I was having a conversation on Twitter earlier with someone who was talking about Alex Scott, who plays for Bristol City, who I really, really rate. And the person was saying, you know, Alfie Devine's better than Alex Scott. It was Lily White Rose I was talking to. And I was like, yeah, but the difference is that Alex Scott's played 5,500 minutes of men's football and Alfie Devine's played 44 minutes of men's football. And Alfie Devine's a year younger and he could catch up, but, you know, he needs to be playing. And I do think it's slightly strange that Spurs have prioritised potentially this idea of him being club trained over his actual footballing development, because we know how important it is to strike while the iron's hot when it comes to the development of young players and not let them stagnate. So I'm a little disappointed that we've not got him out on loan. Alas, that's not that unusual with Spurs and youth development, unfortunately. We should talk a little about the Preston game, Nathan.
Oh, yeah.
A 3-0 win, you know, that shouldn't be sniffed at. It felt, by the end, it felt quite comfortable. So the lineup saw Harry Kane on the bench. Were you surprised that we this finally happened?
I was pleased. I was pleased this finally happened. And not only did it happen, but it happened when, like, there was an excuse not to, which is that Richarlison was
Richarlison.
Late. Yeah. Yeah, I was very... We rested Kane and we won. Those are 2 things to be happy about. We rotated generally and we won. What I was most happy about, I think... no, that's not fair. I was most happy for Son. What I was second most happy about is that the narrative of the season, the pattern of the season has been good half, shit half, or shit half, good half. And Preston was so unpresent in midfield in this game that we were able to dominate both halves. And that was quite a relief to see us do that. Yeah, Preston looked pretty rough, in my opinion. Maybe that's just they made a mistake in how they set up for the game, but they didn't give us a hard time much at all. Son, unshockingly, looks good when he's able to receive the ball with a yard of space or facing towards goal, and multiple times in the game, and receiving from short passes rather than ones, you know, shot into his chest with a player on his arse. So yeah, all of that is pretty good. And I also really like that Danjuma scored. One point I was planning to make on this podcast is like, we've seen it can often take a player quite a while to settle in under Conte, to learn the patterns. Bissouma's still struggling with that now, whereas yeah. Bentancur came in, hit the ground running, right? You see that difference. Danjuma's on a short loan with an option to buy for quite a lot. So my concern was that he would come in, take several weeks to learn the patterns, get a couple of injuries along the way because he's a very injury-prone player. And then by the time that he's ready and we're ready for him, we're only playing one game a week and we don't need him after all. And then we don't get a good judgment on whether this is a player worth spending loads of money on or not. Him scoring on his debut helps quite a bit. As, by the way, there's the fact that when he came on, he played the centre forward role, which is possibly, someone made this point to me, I forget who or where, that involves less sort of pattern-based work because you're the inventive end, you're the improvisational end of things in the Son and Kane type roles. So yeah, a lot of things to be moderately pleased with in that game, yeah.
Mm. Yeah, I think we absolutely dominated the ball. As you say, Preston were very disappointing. As I understand, they have been all season. I've seen a bit of them because of Troy Parrott. Yeah. They've been dreadful. They've changed their manager as well. We absolutely dominated the ball, as I was saying. But is there any concern that we didn't really create much? So expected goals, 0.79. Is that anything we need to be worried about?
No, because if you create a chance from 25 yards for Sun, that's a good chance. And if you score from it, you don't need to exert yourself trying to score more.
Yeah.
We weren't greatly creative. We lacked depth in behind, offense from the wingbacks, shocker. I think that we could have switched around so that Perisic was the left wing back. Sun was playing centre forwards nominally, but moving about from there. And Sessegnon was the inside left player. Because then you get Perisic on the ball out wide, and that would have offered us a different threat. We were very sort of congested, but we managed to do okay through that congestion, despite the limitations, despite no Kane, despite rotated defenders, despite rotated midfield, despite lacking much at all from our wingbacks, we still managed to create enough to score three goals. I'm not worried.
I feel like we should speak a little about how broken Sessegnon looks at the moment. We did have this conversation about a month ago, didn't we, about how it just feels like it's just not going to work out for him.
Yeah, it does feel that way. I've been thinking about this recently. I nearly tweeted about this because, firstly, I mentioned a few episodes ago, like, I think that playing on the same side as Sun limits his game a little bit because his thing is arriving at the back post. Which, by the way, if you're a Spurs fan, you might think that being a wingback who arrives at the back post is like a fairly common thing. But it's not. We've got, we just released Doherty, but we've got a good, with Sessegnon, with Doherty, with Destiny, with being linked to Dumfries, we've got a good stranglehold on most of the fullbacks and wingbacks who do that in world football. Anyway, sorry, I'm getting distracted. I do think that playing on the same flank as Son has had a negative effect on his attacking output. But I also think that I and Spurs might have made a mistake with his development. I gunned hard for Sessegnon's development is best off as a wingback. I gunned hard saying the best version of Sessegnon is the version that turns into a wingback and is able to do his attacking stuff whilst also, you know, not being a dedicated attacker, but being someone who can go up and down his flank and do a bit of defending, a bit of ball carrying. And I'm beginning to doubt that that was the right call.
I definitely think there's something in that. His next move is so critical for him. So fascinated to see what happens with him, depending on who our next coach is and whether they want to give him another try. I do feel now that he has so much impressing to do of the Spurs fans to kind of get them back on side that it's almost not worth it. Like, I feel a lot of people have just completely given up on him. And we've seen players come back from that situation before, but it's difficult and it's quite rare. But he looks so sad all the time. He just looks like he's completely lost all of his self-belief and self-confidence. And getting those back is what's going to make him a good player again, ultimately. And I just can't see it happening. I can't see it happening. He's a player that's too reliant on things around him being right for him to excel, and requires optimal conditions, which simply aren't there at the moment, and I can't see being there for him for a while. So I'm pretty much over the Sessegnon experiment at this point.
Yeah.
I sort of feel like he needs to just be a backup for the rest of the season.
Yeah. He put on a bunch of muscle weight. He really worked on his explosivity over the summer, and he didn't use that to dominate his opposite number. He didn't use that to be great in the air. He didn't use that to take his man on. He didn't use that to muscle his man off the ball. He just sort of looked a bit
thicker. I think it's mostly in the head. It's like if he believed that he could muscle them, he could have done it before. Like, I don't think he needed to add more muscle. Probably it would definitely have helped, but I don't think he needed that. I think he just needed to believe that he could beat those players to the ball, beat those players in the tackle, and I don't think he does believe it.
That's crazy.
I think he's just, it's really sad, but I think he's just broken as a footballer right now, and it's going to take a lot to rebuild him. And we've seen this before. We've seen this before a lot at Spurs. It doesn't feel great watching him. And like, Bardi's mentioned it before, like the way he gets substituted and has to walk around the whole pitch, it just feels cruel, doesn't it?
A lap of shame.
It does feel like a lap of shame. And he seems like such a nice young man as well. Just feel really sad for him. Feel really, really sad for him. But hey, no, we're not a charity. Sam King wrote, guessing you're aware of the interview Sol Campbell did with The Guardian over the weekend. In case you're not, he linked to it. Be fascinated to hear your collective thoughts on what Sol has had to say on the next upcoming episode of The Extra Inch. So Sol Campbell has given an interview with The Guardian where he talks about how Spurs fans constantly singing about his death is very difficult for him to deal with, how it's been difficult for his family to deal with, how it kind of implies that like, this situation has made his whole life really difficult. I wanted to find out how you felt about that.
I think it's good. Man, he's such a fucking dickhead. It's like somewhere in there is a salient point. Somewhere in there is a worthwhile argument to have. Hey, at the end of the day, it is just football, right?
And it was 25 years ago.
And it was 25 years ago. Yeah. But also, you're a knobhead, right? Also, you've never acknowledged...
zero self-awareness. Zero self-awareness. Absolutely you've zero self-awareness.
You've never acknowledged that you could have had an effect on other people. You've never acknowledged that, okay, only within football, you did something wrong, right? And also, you are literally a former Tory candidate for Mayor of London. That is so, so, so much more harmful in a practical, real, everyday sense, being a Tory, to thousands, millions of other people than us singing songs about you ever could be. So I have no sympathy. So there's a point to be made, but not by him, not under the way he lives his life.
That's exactly what I was going to say. Like, I think if it were anyone else, then it would be completely reasonable what he was saying. Like, I don't sing the song, it's Jelly and Ice Cream When Campbell Dies. I don't sing that because I do feel like it's a little bit too much at this point, 25 years on. And to be honest, I think most people are just singing it for a laugh, aren't they? They're not really like, they don't actually want Sol Campbell to die. They're just singing it because they think it's funny. But even if they did... were singing it because they wanted Sol Campbell to die. Like, in a way, I'm a bit like, so what? It's football fans, you know? As you say, he did something which is pretty much the worst thing that a footballer could do to their club. Pretty much the worst. I can't think of too many worse things that a footballer could do to their club and the club's fan base. And to 25 years on, have absolutely no self-awareness about that, no shame about it, no sense of him feeling bad or an apology. Fuck him. Fuck Sol Campbell.
Fuck him. And I sympathise with any fan who's like, hey, this is 25 years ago, I don't care anymore. Or it was 25 years ago, I wasn't even like born. I wasn't a fan, you know? I don't care. Let's move on. Sure, I sympathise with that position. We could move on. But I also don't blame anyone who's still going on about it. And I definitely have no sympathy for Sol Campbell.
You have been listening to The Extra Inch with me, Windy, my sidekick and best friend, Barney, and our tactics guy, Nate Clark. If you like this, there's plenty more at patreon.com/TheExtraInch. Production is by Nathan A. Clark. Our logo, artwork and website are designed by Creighton Miller. Our music is by David Lindmer. You can find him on Instagram at David Lindmer. Do check him out, he's great. Follow us on Twitter and Facebook at The Extra Inch. Email us at podcast@theextrainch.co.uk. Subscribe, leave us a rating and a review. And most importantly, be sure to tell all of your Spurs friends. Shout out to the X-Subs, we love every single last one of you. And of course, come on you Spurs.